on. This is Short Pants Free Radio. Gamers, get your ears on because we're blowing the speakers out.
Grimdark Live. Webcast for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf from the Warhammer 40k and Age of Sigmar worlds. Don't miss the live show on Thursdays. But for now, you got us on sloppy seconds with our podcast with the Grimdark Gang. It's time once again for Grimdark Live.
Hey, welcome to Grimdark Live, your weekly webcast for all things Warhammer 40k and Age of Sigmar. I'm your host, Patrick, and as always, my co-hosts, Gary and Steve. Fellas, what do you hear? What do you say?
That was the longest wait for the opening in history. What are you, from Notre Dame?
I'll tell you what, man. It's not like them quickies at Oklahoma, you know, show up on the field for no reason, get that loss in. What?
Well, there's no loss in yet. It's still a goal in the loss.
Wait till they play the high school junior varsity team. They're really going to be in trouble.
You're not on our schedule this year, so...
What do you got, man? What do we, Gary? What do we got? What do we got in store for the show today?
We got a massive Iron Hands FAQ, aka Nerf, just came out. I couldn't be happier. I use all the Salt of Marines now to put it on my potato chips, and I'm going to go over Michigan GT, and from there. And I believe the other thing had on it was like a relook at missions.
Yeah. Good deal, man. Good deal. I'm really looking forward to hearing about that Michigan GT you had up there. You know, those games. I've been seeing a lot of stuff on the boards about it, and it looked like a hell of an event. So I'm really looking forward to it. You know, and I'm sorry as hell that we didn't make it there, and we really got to make a point to get there. I really, you know, everybody I talk to just says what an incredible time Michigan GT is.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's great. So.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. So folks, for many guys, just kind of queuing in on the conversation here, We had Gary and the nicest guy in tabletop gaming. We had Randy up there. Those guys were taking some pictures together and going out there and spreading the Grimdark love, man. It was seemed like a pretty awesome event from everything we've heard. So congratulations to everyone that participated in the awesome event. But yeah, in the further news, we got Beastgrave and we got 40K Salamanders that are in the news. We're going to be talking a little bit about them. But Steve, you got something here too. What do you got, man?
Well, wait a minute. You forgot about the most important part of the intro.
Oh, here we go. What?
Didn't you tell the fans what happened to Randy?
Well, I was gonna get there because there was a point that I needed to make with both of you guys on the show here. You know, I'm a little irritated with you guys, and we got to have a discussion.
Okay, but I mean, I think we need to. We need to get in contact with Randy and make sure he's okay.
You know,
I mean,
here's the thing. You know, and I'm just gonna come out and say this right now. I got to tell you. You know, I don't know how this show, you know, can continue sometimes. It's really amazing with all this legal situations. And folks, what I'm referring to is all the legal situations that my two co-hosts here get themselves into every single week.
Whoa, hold on a second.
No.
You're the driver to all of this.
Well, so here's the thing. You know, I really need.
He just sits around and nothing ever happens and he just. Prays and drinks holy wine all day. That's not how this fight works.
You know, I'm very innocent, folks. You know, don't listen to Gary. His horns hold up his halo. That's kind of, you know, but we all like him for, you know, we look past a lot of those things. But here's the thing.
My horns have a halo on them.
So, you know, I really need to apologize to all of our listeners for these two here, you know, and you know, just let's look at this. Let's look at the facts here. Just last week, Steve and this Pilates incident. You know, a few weeks earlier, Gary was dragged into some establishment called Leave It to Beavers by Steve, you know, for some very questionable charity events that I think that really put our poor Randy over the edge. You know, I don't think you guys realize what you've done to the guy. And I think we need to open the show by discussing this, or I really do. You know, I don't know if he'll ever be the same. You know, Randy was last seen earlier today running down the street in women's lingerie. I mean, initial responses from some of the fans that witnessed this was that they stated...
it was the Kim Kardashian collection.
Well, but here's the thing. They stated that they were very impressed at how fast he can run in high heels, you know, while wearing a flowing negligee.
Well, he paid a lot for those pumps.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, and Randy, women's underwear, you know, authorities tried to apprehend him, but he did get away. You know, Gary, Steve, do you know how he got away?
Well, I don't want to talk about that on the air. I mean, my God.
Well, he gave him the slip.
This is why we can't have nice things.
What are you talking about?
This is why we don't encourage Pat.
Here's the thing. No. You guys brought it up. I'm trying to, you know.
Well, I'm trying to help the guy. I'm trying to find out what happened.
Well, I'm trying to tell you, it's your guys' fault. I'm the innocent one in here trying to look out for Randy. You guys are, you know, ruining the poor kid.
Well, I mean, it took him a long time to find him. I mean, yeah, I know the guy with the lantern found him, but that's not important.
You know,
when you throw a rock into a pack of dogs and one barks, it's always the one that got hit. Have our audience noticed that the one that's always talking is Pat?
You know, I got to tell you, you guys really got to start thinking about somebody like me besides yourselves. You know, I'm important here too, guys. Randy, you know, you guys never think about anyone but yourselves.
There it is, right there. So, now, I know me and Randy thought about ourselves on the 10-hour combined drive back and forth to Michigan where we were there alone. Maybe that's what put him over the edge. The lack of AOS presence from yourself there to help him.
Oh, no, you didn't.
There we go. Ouch. All right. Right in the ding-ding. All right. So,
now it'll change to something else, folks.
We're going to need to because that bruise has got to heal. But, yeah, so that's poor Randy. He's out there, I'll tell you what, folks. If anybody can leave in the description below the show here, you know, their last sight of Randy or where they might have seen him, whoever can locate him with the best description, you just might get yourself a free Grimdark T-shirt. So let us know what you think of Randy and where he's at. And any description that you can leave in the comment section down below would really help us out in locating our poor little buddy.
Heard he was last seen in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, but that's not important.
There you go. And myself, as far as continuing topics here, I'm going to be talking a little bit briefly on the Cities of Sigmar, looking to the Greywater Fastness, so an all-dwarf list. And I know that I can think they can do very well. I've been hearing a lot of hot and cold on this particular book, and I think I kind of want to shore some stuff up if I can. Won't take that long. It's a pretty easy topic. But, and as always, we have the question of the day and the closing thought towards the end of the show. And that's just us getting warmed up, folks.
Hey, you Grimdark Goons. Thank you all so much for listening to our Grimdark Live podcast. If you're new to the Grimdark Live experience or new to our podcast and like what you hear, please follow this podcast and pass us along to your friends. Let us know what you think about Grimdark Live in the show's comment sections, and let us know just how we're doing. Also, don't forget to catch us live on Thursdays. And if that ain't enough for you, check out our website at www.grimdarklive.com. That's grimdarklive.com. Anyway, thanks for listening, following, and just being awesome.
I want to roll right into the news. So I know, Gary, you got a big thing you want to talk about for these FAQs, but let me get the little stuff out of the way first. Good?
Sounds good to me, man.
All right. Well, first thing, we got some organized play that's happening in Beastgrave. And Beastgrave was kind of a topic that we had all kind of talked about here a couple of weeks ago, you know, and it kind of got brought up as far as something that we had kind of discussed as far as the game and its introduction, but organized play packs are making it easy for local stores to run tournaments and events of their own. And at your participating location, you'll have a chance to test your skills against some new opponents and win some fabulous prizes that are going to be sponsored by GW. So every organized play pack is going to have some exclusive items. And I'll actually pull up a picture here to kind of show you kind of what they're doing. I kind of like what they're showing off here as far as I guess the best way to put it is the items themselves as far as what they're going to be giving out. So once I get the picture up here, thanks for all of your patience. Won't happen. It looks like we're having a little bit of technical difficulty, so I'll just talk through it. But the play pack has exclusive prizes, I guess the best way to put it. This time around, we're going to be giving you a chance to win they're going to be giving you a chance to win some alternative art cards for some of the Wild Hunt and some of the Despoilers, featuring some portraits of all the fighters that come in the starter set. And there's going to be also a set of alternative art cards that are going to be more like, looks like they might be about 8x12 little cards themselves. And what you're going to need to actually play the game is some of the items that are going to be coming in the starter box. So check out the Warhammer Underworld website for a full list of participating locations. And if by chance your local store, whether it be a, you know, ironically enough, a GW store or a or an independent retailer, they're not involved in the organized play, let them know. You can have them get in touch with their Games Workshop trade representative and go ahead and get them registered. But it looks like what they're going to try to do is they're going to kind of harken back. And Steve, you might remember this from the fantasy days when they did these national tournaments through stores. You know, they would have each store number, each, you know, independent or Games Workshop store would register their store number, and people would, you know,
back, like Storm of Chaos.
Exactly. Right. Right. Or the old Albion campaign,
that. Albion, Storm of Chaos, and the Crown. What was the one with the Crown? The dwarf one.
The Nemesis Crown.
Nemesis Crown, exactly.
Yeah. So that one is also going to be happening. So that's, you know, it looks like they're going to harken back to that. I really find it interesting that to me there seems to be a lot of callback to 6th edition, even in this current meta of Age of Sigmar 2.0, I guess the best way to put it. So I kind of like what they're doing right now, to be quite honest with you. So more to come on that as it unfolds. I got it right here, guys. I finally found it. So here's some of the cards. Hard. Yeah, yeah. Had a little bit of technical difficulty. We had to get the gremlins out of the spark box here. Yet. Yeah, and so these are some of the art cards that are going to be coming in the box. These are also some of the player cards that are going to be coming for the competitive play. And this is kind of what the whole competitive play set looks like. Of course, they're going to get one of them little funky little crystal awards. And so again, you know, there's some, what you're going to need to play this is if you go to the website here, let me pull this up here. So if you go to the Warhammer website for Underworlds, you'll be able to download PDFs, some of their championship format rules downloads, their alliance format rule downloads, and their relic format rule downloads that you're going to want to get your hands on. They're going to be parts that you're going to need to be able to play the game. So again, find out if your store is participating. If they're not, mildly insult them and get them in line so that they can get on board with what looks like is going to shape up to be a pretty darn good event. So moving on, we got some 40K. Moving on from the Age of Sigmar news, we got some salamanders. And I know we kind of touched on the salamanders a little briefly back a few weeks ago, right, Gary?
Yeah, a little bit of background in their story.
Yeah, essentially. And I got to tell you, it's a pretty cool story. But this right here is the Space Marines preview on the Sons of Vulcan, and there's so much to go through. Hot on the heels of yesterday's look, I guess, to say on the Imperial Fists, and I know we're going to be touching on a little bit more of that in the FAQs with Gary here in a minute. We're going to be looking at the Codex supplement for the Salamanders that's going to be for pre-order this coming Saturday. And this is kind of an interesting army to me. I'm not, like I said, I'm kind of still on the outside looking in, getting involved with 40K, but Salamanders seems to have a very committed following of gamers. Am I fair in saying that, Gary?
Yep, very similar to the Orc guys that we talked about before.
Yeah,
Like Salamanders and then Blood Angels and all those are not just the regular Marine players that just go, oh, I'm going to play this because it's the best one. When you see a Salamanders player, they've been one for a while typically.
Exactly, and I love that. I love that they have that kind of an allegiance. So the Lords of Nocturne, I guess, are born, the backstory is, I guess they're born, you know, in fire and you know, obviously they're all forged in battle and all that kind of good stuff. And the story of them really is that they're humanity's finest warriors. They're great craftsmen. And as the heirs of the Primarch Vulcan, am I saying that one right? Like Spock, Vulcan?
That is correct.
All right. I guess they're bearers of this baleful fire and they possess the strength they say they're what, as strong as any two Space Marines, I guess is the backstory. I hope I'm getting that right, but
something like that. They get the fire from the planet that they came from, where Salamanders are at. The storyline is the Emperor and Vulcan both fought a large Salamander type dragon on the world. Of course, the Emperor won, but he was so impressed with it, that's where they got their title from. So
gotcha. All right, nice backstory. So these guys have a new character by the name of Adrax Agatone, and he's the captain of the third company, and he's known as the Pyroclast. Did I say that right, Gary?
That's correct.
All right. And like all the warriors, I guess he commands, he's the, this guy is the bringer, man. He's the tough guy. He's going to bring you probably a pretty fiery death, I would imagine. And so the codex supplement for the salamanders, and I guess the new model that's going to be coming out for Adrax Agatone, is going to be available for pre-order this Saturday. I don't think the model is out yet, but I do think that both are going to be order. They're going to be for pre-order. So how popular, just as a side note, with as cultish as this army is, how popular and what kind of an impact, Gary, do you think that this army is going to make on the, in the 40K world?
I would say the impact on it's not going to be that high on competitive wise, unless people want to specifically use what it is they do, because Iron Hands was at the top of the world. We'll go over that here shortly. But too early to tell. What they have is really good because they have like rerolls for flamers and things like that, which anything that's rerollable is high powered, in my opinion. I think they'll do very well. You're going to see people that were salamander players start to show up at events and place and do well, especially if the durability rooms are out there, because it doesn't matter if you hit like a truck, if your truck's in a ditch, you know, you got to be able to stick around to do it. And those pictures, that video is ridiculous.
Yeah. They're like that. Their cinematography's pretty, getting a lot better. I mean, you're talking about the actual video quality or the actual.
Yeah, well, what's going on right now, the video they're showing. I mean, the out of all the Space Marine chapters to play with, for me, it would be these or Space Wolves. Just because Space Wolves is like drunken Vikings, but you know. And salamanders also go by the "we want to protect citizens more than anything else." So that.
Oh yeah, yeah. I remember you saying that. Yeah. I remember you saying that back a couple weeks
about
ago.
The only faction that's concerned with casualties of civilians.
Ah, okay. So let's actually get into the topic at hand here. I know that the one that that we kind of wanted to get into to kind of round out the news here is the Codex supplements, the FAQs that dropped for Iron Hands, and kind of give us a little bit of backstory, Gary, on why that's
all right,
a good or bad thing.
All right. So before pre-FAQ, we've had Castellans, we've had Yanari, we've had Eldar Flyers, and all of these that go out and say you have 10 GTs, they'll win like four of them. The first weekend Iron Hands were available, they won or placed in the top three of seven out of seven GTs, some number like that. They were very high, and it's because they have incredible offensive output and at the time were the most durable one in the game. And if you'll scroll down a little bit, the reason why they were the most durable is that very first one, Rites of Tempering, was a 3-inch bubble from their named character. They gave everything a 5 of a vulnerable save. Now they've changed it to infantry.
Oh, now, I see that. Okay. All right.
Because before it was everything, 6 inches, not 3. And so you would have a repulsor, which has a toughness of 8, has 16 wounds, and a 3-up save. So here's all the things you had to get through to kill off a repulsor. First, a 3-up save. All right, you can get through that with negative threes, but you had a 5-up invul, which means a third of your shots isn't going to work. And then when you get through that, your damage is reduced by 1. And then when you get through that, they have a 6-up ward save, feel no pain, if you will.
Sure.
So yeah, you had to fight through all of these things to get rid of one. And I mean, the first time I play tested against, I was playing with 9 broadsides. I shot all of them at a repulsor and killed it. That's 148 shots. And all of them was re-rolling hits. One unit was re-rolling wounds. And it was a stratagem, a +3 to be able to wound them on 4s instead of 5s. It just barely managed to get through one.
So it seems like to me, and this is, again, from a neophyte standpoint, the Iron Hands come out, and just from seeing the impact that this army had when it hit the streets, let's just say, I'm sure all these Iron Hand players were just as happy as a pervert with a Playboy at what this was. Do you think this, I don't want to call this a nerf, but do you think this is going to deter people from playing the army?
No, it'll deter them from playing repulsor spam to where they just take 3 tanks that can't be killed and blow you off the table.
Right.
And I'm going to be the person of hate, of course, and deservingly so. I mean, Everybody's like, oh, well, it's this and this and this. And no, if you have no fear of any of your stuff dying, not because your opponent sucks, but because you just don't have a fear of it dying because it doesn't matter what they shoot at it, it's not going to die. And you pack the type of firepower that you do coming out of it, that is not good for the game. It's not good for you as a player. And Games Workshop had stated 2 weeks roughly after Codex had come out, they were going to do a FAQ on it. So anytime something new that comes out, there has always and will always be a buyer beware tag. If it is too good to be true and it is murdering everything, it's going to get nerfed. So don't go crazy and buy all that stuff. Mine would be, let's say I'm a Salamanders player, right? And I've got all the old Salamander models and the book's coming out. I would not purchase new units until after that FAQ came out.
True. Okay. Now you're trying to imply that gamers need to have common sense.
Well, logically.
Yeah.
I'm going to win. You're going to win one tournament because after that, it's going to get nerfed. If that tournament's LVO or something, LVO, Adepticon, or Nova, sure, because it's that large and worth that many points. But outside of that, no. So if you'll scroll down a little bit. So you had that one, and you had the Relic, which was the Iron Stone, right? Which would say the damage reduced was everything within 3 inches. The damage reduced by one.
Correct, yeah.
Now, at the start of each battle round, you select a vehicle within 3 inches of the bearer, and that vehicle now gets it. Instead of all three repulsors having it, it'll just be one that gets the damage reduced by one. No, the page 58 one. Down, left side.
Oh.
Yep, the iron
stuff. Got it, right there. Got it.
Those are the two biggest ones.
Okay. You know, I don't see those as very big deals.
They're massive deals.
Oh, okay.
Here's why. Think about it this way. A heavy burst cannon from a Riptide is 12 shots. Strength 6, AP minus 2, 2 damage. Okay?
Sure, I'm with you.
So if I shoot a Riptide at a... Let's say I shoot 3 Riptides at him. Okay? Without any kind of buffs or anything like that, we're just going to go 3 Riptides shooting into 1 Repulsor. Okay?
Okay, I'm with you.
So you're going to have... That's going to be 18 shots. Yeah, we'll even throw some other stuff in there. So 18 shots. Let's put it where they hit on twos because they have a special thing against fly.
All right.
6, AP is minus 1, and it's 2 damage. Well, that 2 damage immediately goes to 1. Because damage is reduced by 1, right?
Okay, so now, but we still got 18 shots at 2 plus.
Right.
Okay, so now we're down to 1 damage.
At 2 plus, weapon strength 6, which means you're wounding on 5s.
Right. Okay.
AP negative 1, 1 damage.
Right.
On average, that does 2.5 damage. That's how much damage gets through. 2.5. Yeah.
From an average math hammer standpoint.
Right. From 18 shots. So, by that math, firing with this type of weapon, you're going to need, 36 would be 5 wounds, so 72 would be 10. You're looking at over 105 shots to kill one repulsor.
Okay. Yeah, that's a big deal.
That would be why. So that's a little bit outrageous that's out there. Now, those other armors are durable. Iron Hands are still very durable. It's just now you take your one prized possession and you give that one the reduced damage by one each turn.
Okay.
There. So you have to play somewhat safe instead of, oh, here's all my stuff in the middle of the table. You can't kill any of it. Oh, and if you go second, just forget about it.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out what group to kill. But anyway, they did that, and then all Iron Hands player, oh, that's too much. No, it's not too much because you haven't played against that shit. There are – I'm a firm believer in bringing the most hard hearts that you can find. But I played 7 Flyrants and 4 Molochs, and they nerfed it, and I was like, and rightfully so. And I think that 6 months, it made me a worse 40K player because I didn't have to think.
Well, that happens. Sometimes, you get into your comfort zone. And right, Steve, you just push your models forward. That's it.
Well, when you can't be killed or anything, nothing's going to hurt you. What's the matter? I don't have to think about defense.
Well, I'm not saying that, but sometimes that can be a good thing for a gamer too. You know, if you're playing an overly tactical army and then, you know, you switch to say just kind of a lunkhead army.
I think it's very important we've talked about this in past shows, is very important for you to realize what your skill level is and what your enjoyment is, and then build your list and your army around that. Because you try and play something with too high of a skill cap, you're going to get frustrated. If you play something with too low, you're going to get bored.
Exactly. So, yep. I agree.
And Iron Hands, you put it in the hands of people that don't care about that. They just want to win. They don't care about how static it is.
Well, and that's always going to be something we deal with in the community.
Here's something. Remember we talked about fail points?
Yes.
This army has none.
Interesting.
Other than if the missions are different. The fail point for it would be mission and heavy terrain. But as from a list design against another opponent, there isn't one.
So you're saying that almost any list is going to be lethal on the table?
This one would be, yes.
Okay.
And which now isn't that way, because now you have fail points of, okay, I've got these things that shoot really well, but I got to find a way to keep them alive. Before it wasn't that. Oh, also, here's something for you. So say you have 16 wounds on a repulsor, right? And through all of your shooting, you take it down to 2 wounds.
Right. Okay.
So now it's bracketed. It's hitting on 5s and doesn't move very far and all of this, right?
Right.
Well, all those little Iron Hand characters reach out and touch it. They heal it a minimum of 9 wounds. Minimum of 9. So it's back to 11 before it ever shoots again.
All right. Well,
so that's why.
Yeah, there you have it, man. That's the when did this FAQ drop? Just hours ago.
Today.
Right?
Today.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, and I was a proponent of, well, if they leave it alone, that's fine. So let me find a way to counter it and fight it and stuff like that.
Well,
I do think it's unbeatable down the road, but it creates too many super, super mismatches and just makes certain things unplayable.
Yeah, well, that's the competitive guy in you. And then, you know, Steve, as a side note, you and I have always, you know, we've talked about it as well, you know, saying that, you know, it's the onus is on us. It's coming upon us to figure out how to beat that other person's army.
Oh, absolutely.
Regardless of what they put on the table.
Right. Yeah, that's not your opponent's problem. That's your problem.
There's nothing more satisfying than destroying those lists.
Yes. Yes.
You know, yes. Like right now, one of the unbeatable ones that they said is the Fire Slayers list that showed up on Bells of Lost Souls that Steve linked to me. I spent my lunch time reading that one. And why? Because it hits hard and it's very durable.
Yeah, right.
Yep. You
know, well, these are magical things in either one of our hobbies.
Yeah. But I also think that there's a big misconception out there. You know, you get these people that I think what I'm hearing as far as, you know, the Iron Hands and you know, that it's obviously a balanced list besides some minor details, is a lot of people, and I've been guilty of this too. You build this list of this army that hits harder than winter on welfare, and then you turn around and you got nothing in the back end. Maybe you got a little movement. Maybe, you know, you don't have good defense, your glass cannon or whatever it is, and you fall apart. So I think too, you know, when you get an army in front of you, say like the Iron Hands, I guess, you know, that would be a very tough nut to crack as far as from, you know, coming at you from many different avenues. Yeah. I mean, I think that would make me a better player, but I could see where a lot of people, you know, you got the meta chasers and the anti-meta chasers, you know, the people that, you know, I mean, I'll never forget, and this is a side story, folks, and sorry, my ADHD just kicked in, but I was at a game once when a guy put his army down, and I don't remember what the army was. Offhand, I don't remember, but it's irrelevant. His opponent put an army down. The guy looked at the army and said, "I'm not playing you. I'm not playing this army." And and I sat there kind of with my, because that actually happened to me once on a similar note, but I was being a dick, playing a massive Nobbler army. But my bottom jaw was resting on my top of my shoes as I was watching this guy just literally just quit. Just, "I'm not playing." And I thought, you know, that's a wimp if I've ever seen one, man.
Wait a minute. What the hell is that? What's going on?
And now, it's time for that part of the show where we present the rules from hell.
Yes, that's right, Grimdark Goons. It's time for the Rules from Hell, where we present the game rules from the past or present of the Warhammer worlds that just sucked.
Here it is, gang. The Warhammer Rule from Hell. In the 7th edition of Warhammer 40K, there was a rule called Noobs in a Knot. This may have arguably just been insidious GW marketing tactics, instead of them failing to understand their own game. But Gorkonauts and Morkonauts were touted as nearly indestructible, and reliably able to transport noobs or other elite units into the fray despite the fact that they were not super heavy vehicles. While you could one-shot them with a lucky Melta or Las Cannon shot, a more common outcome was for one to be immobilized by a Grav Cannon rolling a 6. As for serving as an assault transport, GW forgot to give the Knots the assault ramp rule, and thus you couldn't actually assault from one. To add insult to injury, these vehicles cost more than a Land Raider while moving slower. This was definitely a rule from hell.
And now you know a rule from hell.
All right, let's get back to the show. But at any rate, so there's my left turn at Albuquerque as far as a story. But Gary, I definitely want to hear about Michigan GT, but we gotta wake up Steve, and I know that he's got a topic that we want to get on right away here, and that's Steve. You're gonna kind of take us away from the 40K world for a brief little while, and you're gonna talk about some Age of Sigmar, some cavalry army options for Hammerhall out of the Cities of Sigmar book, yeah?
Yeah, the Hammerhall Lancers was a battalion that really kind of caught my eye, and there's a big argument kind of going online about whether or not you should arm them with lances or halberds. But before we get into that, it's basically an army made up of demogryphs. So if you don't know what a demogryph is, just think of a griffin, except smaller, about maybe twice the size of a horse.
I think I've got something up on the screen here.
Yeah, let's see if we can take a look here. All right, let me turn it sideways here. Can't really see from my perspective, but they look fairly close.
Yeah, it's they're demogryphs. Think of Great Danes with a bird head. There you go.
Yeah. But they're a monstrous mount, as we used to call them back in 8th edition.
Sure.
Or close, damn close to it. But these are basically the new cavalry for the Sigmarite cities.
Right.
We don't have horse armies anymore. We don't even have cavalry anymore. If you think about it, I don't think there's any human, at least, cavalry that we still have, except outriders.
Yeah, there's the pistoliers and the outriders.
Yeah, like the pistoliers and the outriders. But I mean, we don't have like lancers, like guys with.
No. Bretonians are gone. Lances. Bretonians are gone.
Yeah, exactly. The Bretonians are gone, and so are the Empire Knights, for that matter.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the Demogryph Knights are a really cool unit. I've never looked at them twice, I have to admit it, but I did page through the Cities of Sigmar book, and I said that if I was going to play any of the armies, I would like to try that cavalry option, which is the Hammerhall Lancers.
Okay.
And basically, it's just a free guild general on a griffin with, I believe it's 3 units of the demogryphs.
Right. Okay.
And I've made the list, and the list is something like the griffin, a battle mage, 12 of the demogryphs, and then 2 units of 6. And that comes out to, I think, just under 2,000 points.
Okay.
And then, of course, with the battalion. But I just thought it would be a really great list. The only question that people have is, do I take the lances and basically turn them into eels? Because that's what essentially they do. They get get bonuses when they charge with the lances. The rend becomes 2 and the damage becomes 2.
Right.
But after they charge and they hit, you better hope you hit hard, because if you don't, you're going to get raffle stomped the next turn.
That's true.
So for me, I always want to go for the grind, because I know that, you know, you're not going to just ever come in and hit a unit and break them.
You know, so, what I think is interesting about this list and this concept is, you know, in this game, ever since they pretty much iced Bretonians, and then they pretty much just got rid of them. Different order players have been trying to find that cavalry army in the post-Bretonnia world. And I've seen that probably since 2016, maybe 2017. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it is because there's a lot of versatility in an order army.
Oh God. Yes.
And especially
this one, because these demogryphs are no joke. I mean, when they hit you, they cause mortal wounds on sixes when they roll to wound you, I believe. And then they have three attacks with the lancers themselves. And if you're using the halberds, it's rend of one always.
Right.
But once you charge with the lances, after that initial charge, you're done. You no longer have rend and your damage drops back down to one. So for me, I think I would rather have the halberds, the cavalry halberds, they're called.
Yeah.
Because I definitely want to make sure that I'm always going to be rending something. As you and I have been talking about. And their save is a 3-up. So they're one of the few units in the game that has a 3-up save that's troops. Not heroes, troops.
Yeah, and I don't think these guys in a Cities of Sigmar list can be battle line. They're not even battle line if.
Yes, they are battle line. They're battle line if you have a free guild general on a griffin.
Okay. Well, then that would explain that picture right there.
Yeah, okay. That's the battalion. Read that rule that's the last one, Pat. I can't see
Savage
it.
From Ferocity?
My perspective. Savage Ferocity? Yes, what does it say?
If the unmodified wound roll for an attack made with the unit's beak and talons is a 6, that attack inflicts one mortal wound on the target in addition to any normal damage.
Yeah, that's an incredible... I mean, these guys are just an incredible cavalry unit. And I even know that some of the guys in our own group are thinking about doing like conversions. I know Kyle was talking about doing a conversion with
dwarves, with Dwarden.
Yeah, with dwarves on bears.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a really cool idea. I would love to see that on a table.
Yeah.
I think this army is going to really provide people with a lot of opportunities to come up with some conversions.
You know, I think so too. And, you know, I got to tell you, as far as the cavalry army goes, I think it's going to be intriguing for anyone, even from like a hobbyist. Is that a word? Hobbyist.
Sure, yeah. It is. Absolutely,
hobbyist
it is.
Standpoint. You know, because Jesus, even if you were
hobbyist was a word. That's what we are. God's sakes.
Well, I guess that is. You know, well, not me, because I truly suck at painting. I mean, Gary, come on, you've seen my artwork, man.
And you thought I slept through the AOS talk.
Never you, man. But you know, going back to this, I mean, think about the Free Guild Pistoliers. Now, this is your typical cavalry unit. I mean, these guys...
cavalry.
Exactly. But what's interesting about these guys is these guys have something called... I think it's called Hail of Bullets, mm-hmm. where the pistoliers themselves, after they make a charge move, unlike, you know, stand and shoot in the olden days, after they make a charge move, they can shoot with any brace of pistols that they're armed with. So... That's something else. I mean, if you think about a lot of the charge bonuses that your demogryphs get, right? And I guess just for the conversation piece here, let's go ahead and while I'm pulling this up, keep going with your spot here.
Yeah, they're absolutely beautiful models. And once again, I love the fact that they gave them this ability to cause mortal wounds, because we've had this conversation before. I don't know how many of you ever out there have ever been around a horse. When you are next to a horse, I don't care who you are, how big you are. When you are next to a horse, you actually feel the power of that animal. If you ever put your hand on a horse, I can tell you, folks, I mean, I grew up when I was a kid. My grandparents had horses. I can tell you they are ridiculously powerful animals. So if this animal comes, even a regular horse comes charging you, it's going to do something like a mortal wound. And of course, like in terms of like a Warhammer, I never understood why they did not make horses stronger in the game.
Right.
Because a full cavalry charge will absolutely pulverize anything that it hits. Now I want you to take an animal that's twice the size of that horse, and that's charging you at full gallop. You're going to die.
I mean,
I don't care what you are. you're going to die.
Even in the game, the mount always hits better than the rider anyways. That's always kind of been the underlying
joke. But that's the
way
it should be.
Right.
I mean, think about it. Logically, you're talking about an animal that has enough power to pull, you know, entire chop down trees, for God's sakes, like the loggers used to do. So you're telling me that this animal hitting a squishy human being, hell, even if the animal hits something like ogre-sized, it's going to cause damage.
Well, I mean, look at this war scroll right here for the pistoliers. There's nothing on here that's a charge that they even do any kind of mortal wounds, right?
Yeah, well that's the point. A demigriff, if it's lucky, can do 3 mortal wounds on a charge, and that's in addition to the normal damage it does.
Right.
Which I think is phenomenal. That is exactly the way those animals should be. They are twice the size of a horse. Look at the knights on. Go back to the picture with them where the knights are riding on top of them. The actual stock photo.
That one right there?
No. The one on the GW website.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah, go to the website picture. Because, like I said, for someone who grew up around horses, I can tell you, folks, look at the size of those animals. Those are twice the size of a normal horse. Now imagine a horse with a beak and talons, and it's charging at you at full gallop. They're going to decimate anything that they hit.
No, yeah, that's a really good point, considering Gary and I pretty much only bet on horses.
Oh, for God's sake.
Hey, Gary, how did Glue Factory do for you last week?
I'm not ready to say.
Hey, Seabiscuit, let's get back to business
right now.
Just checking in on you, buddy.
Oh, for God's sakes.
All right.
If you look at those animals, that they are exactly, I think the guy, as a matter of fact, I think I even heard this rumor that the guy who designed part of the Cities of Sigmar book is a big fan of cavalry. Like, he really wants to make cavalry a thing again in the game of Warhammer. Because I can tell you, back in 6th edition, cavalry was the bomb. You had vampire knights, the black knights. You had blood knights. You had chaos knights.
Mm-hmm.
And when these guys would come charging at you at full gallop, 9 times out of 10, they would just smash anything that they would hit.
Okay.
But so that's realistic.
Let me rein this back in here a little bit, because your point is actually, I think the point you're making is actually too good. And I want to kind of bring it down a little bit so that we can kind of put a focal point on it. So let's go back to when you say cavalry, let's talk about the cavalry just briefly that we find in the Cities of Sigmar book. You've got the Free Guild General on a griffin, right? Even though it's a monstrous cavalry, be a monster, right? He's riding.
It's a general riding a monster.
The Demogryph Knights. Then have the Free Guild Outriders. We haven't even talked about those guys yet.
Yeah, they're great. I mean, they're great troops for harassing the enemy, for taking out little chaff units.
Yeah.
They're phenomenal. I love them.
Yeah, like they've got something here, and I'll pull this up here in a second. Sure. They're not quite, I would say, as elite as the Pistoliers, but I would say that they're probably good as far as harassing. But
yeah,
as far as other cavalry units, we got the Battle Mage on a Griffin, right? And then I won't really get into the people.
Yeah, we don't have to.
The characters that are mounted on like the Luminarchs and all that kind of stuff, that doesn't really count, no. I don't think.
Those are more chariots.
Yeah, and I won't get into the Anointed on Frostheart Phoenixes, although I suppose we could get into those guys. I mean, that would be another mounted group. But other than the Sorceress on a Black Dragon, or the Dreadlord on a Black Dragon,
mm-hmm.
or the Drakespawn Knights. Now let's do this. Let's pull up the Drake. Well, no. Let's keep going with your topic here. So you're talking about a cavalry army option for Hammerhall. So let's walk us through what your
I envision it.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you're going to be a purist, and if I'm going to make a cavalry army, then it's going to be a cavalry army. I'm going to have nothing but fast moving troops. Like I said, the list that I came up with, I believe, was the Griffin, a Battle Mage on foot, which kind of sucks in a way, cause I would love to have him on a horse or something, but that's okay. He's there just basically to dispel anyways, but I would have the big unit of 12, demigryphs. And then I would have 2 flanking units, the 2 smaller units. And when I say smaller, 6, I mean, that's not really a small cavalry unit for demigryphs. That's a big unit still. That would be like a strike force kind of army.
Yeah.
That's an army that's going to go up. slam you hard, slam you fast, and hope that they could break you.
All right, so we're at 1,850 points right now, pretty much. You know, you got your general here. Is your Free Guild general on a Griffin? You got your Battle Mage. Probably go with another Battle Mage of some kind, right?
Definitely giving the general on the Battle Mage the Ignac scales, so he has a 4+ ward save versus mortal wounds.
Sure. Okay.
And then pull the list down. So we have the two units of.
We got one unit of 12 Demogryph Knights and then 2 units of 6.
2 units of 6. And then we have to have the points left for the battalion, which I believe was 140.
Hammer Hall Lancers.
Yep. How much is it?
Well, now you're 2080.
Okay. So pull back here. One of those units of Demigryphs, let's drop them back. Well, we could either take out the wizard or take out three.
Well, you know what? I would
almost take out the wizard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would, and I know that is leaving you vulnerable to magic, but I think that these guys, number one, there's no way a wizard is going to be on foot, is going to be with a unit of fast moving cavalry. So I would be very comfortable going into a game with just the general and those three units of cavalry.
Wow. So then you would just beef up. Maybe you go with 2 units of 12 Demogryphs. And 1 unit of 6, and then no battle mage at all.
Yeah, I mean, I would be fine. Did you have 2 units of 12?
Well, no, I had a second battle mage.
No. I would have only gone with one battle mage. So what are we at right now?
We got a Free Guild general on a Griffin. We got that's 320 points. We got a battle mage at 90, and our three battle line are going to be 12 Demogryph Knights, 6 Demogryph Knights, and a third unit of 6 Demogryph Knights.
Correct.
Along with the battalion at 140 points, that brings us to 1990.
Yeah, I think that's the army I put together.
All right.
Yep, that's the army. And like I said, I mean, you know, and I know someone out there right now is going, oh, that army's got flaws. It's not going to be able to hold objective, blah, 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 yada, yada. The army is not meant to be a win the world tournament gangster army. It's meant to be it's a non-competitive army, as they would call it. It's an army you would play to if you loved cavalry and if you wanted to play only cavalry.
So it's like something said, bad to use.
What's that?
So
that's the army I put together, though, and I thought it would be a fun little cavalry army to play. I mean, I was going to play cities, that would be an army that I would toy with.
So it's low model count.
Which I love.
You'd get some great detail as far as, well, I wouldn't be able to get great detail painting them, but I mean, somebody would be able to get great detail painting
They'd
those
be
models.
Beautiful.
Gary definitely wouldn't.
Imagine what Nick could do with those.
Well, I certainly would because of my painter.
Yeah, yeah. Gary would do his part. He'd pay someone to have them painted.
Absolutely, like a small car payment every month.
He would work really hard getting that wallet out of his pocket. Actually, you know what? After all said and done, Gary might be the smartest one of all of us. Damn it.
Yeah. Really.
So
I don't waste time doing it. It's just done.
There you go. So the kicker I have on this is, let's talk about this. You know, we're kind of coming to that point where this is a great topic, but let's kind of boil this down for everybody that's kind of watching and listening here. So we got this list. So we talk about a lot of times, well, this list, when we talk about major tournaments, right, we talk about 5 games, and we say that a list can be anywhere between 0-5 and 5-0.
Yeah.
Where is this list, as it represents a list that's a cavalry army option for Hammer Hall, Cities of Sigmar?
Three and two.
That's what I would say.
Yeah, 3-2.
All right.
I think you'll do great. You'll do great against armies that are not prepared for the fast movement. But if you run into something like Fire Slayers, put them in a box. They're gone.
Well, I would say Fire Slayers, like we talked about last week.
Phoenix Guard would slaughter them. My trolls would probably slaughter them only because they could get through the armor with the -2 rend. And they do such high damage. But against I don't want to say regular armies, but against your normal run of the mill tournament armies, I think you could do 3-2. I don't see any reason why that army couldn't go 3-2. Yeah. I think it might even be lucky enough to go to 4-1.
Well, yeah, I mean, if it's like playing at like Schmerler's Hobby Store or something like that, like in a local.
Yeah,
like a
it local just depends. But it depends on the level of competition that you're facing in the tournament. you take that. Now, if you take that army to an Adepticon, you're going to get slaughtered.
Well, or 3-2. That's, I mean, when I try to raid an army, I'm looking at it from the standpoint of a major event, right? Like a GT.
Okay,
five,
so
five
if we're
games.
Looking at an Adepticon level event, I think the best that army could do would be 3-2. And that is based upon the number of professional players that you're going to be running into. I mean, an experienced guy is going to look at that army and say, oh, I know what to do here. I'm just going to tie him up with chaff and I'm going to, you know, claim objectives and I'm going to, you know, win the game. Okay, great. But understand the difference between someone who's coming into a tournament and playing an army that they love, which we often call a non-competitive army.
Right.
And then you have a competitive army, which would be like your Phoenix Guard or Gary's Fire Slayers.
Correct. And I will say this, the Fire Slayers army, and I'll go back to this because, you know, somebody had commented.
Yeah, that's a 5-0 army.
Oh, absolutely. And this is for another show. We won't drain the pond on this topic. But, you know, there's many different things that make an army what it is. And like, for instance, when we say that this army here, or Steve, I'll let you explain it. You know, this cavalry army option for Hammerhall is a 3-2 army. We're looking at a whole multitude of things. And there's a lot of things that make that Fire Slayer army. You could look at the Fire Slayers and say, well, they only move 4 inches. Well, on the surface, they don't look like much. But that army, I guarantee, in any tournament across the land, will go 5-0. I would even say
4-1 or 5-0.
My Phoenicium list, my Phoenix Guard that I've played forever. Well, I shouldn't say that. I brought them back out of mothballs after about 4 years. That's probably a 4-1 to 5-0 list.
Yes, it is.
But I would say that the Fire Slayers are a solid 5-0. This, I would agree with you. I would say that this is a 3-2. I could see that this might be a 2-3.
It'll be one of the two.
The objectives. But, you know, go into your thoughts as far as we can. Then we're going to move on to Gary's 40. Speaking of tournaments, we're going to talk about some 40K at Michigan GT and the general experience there coming up here in a minute. But to close this one out for us, Steve, walk us down the last little path on this one. So this is a 3-2 army. This is a great army, by the way. I love the concept of this. Tell me what this greatest strength is and what its greatest weakness is.
Greatest strength. Well, it really does depend on how you kit them out. I know that Kyle was mentioning that he would use lances so that when you come in, you hit somebody so hard that there's nothing left, to fight. But I don't know. I tend to be a little bit more conservative. I want to have something that can get into a long fight with someone or a long haul. I would probably go with the halberds if I was going to play them.
I would go with the halberds myself, yes.
That's just a personal preference. Like I said, it really depends on, you know, what you want them to look like. I mean, I think the lances look great. But I would just go with the cavalry halberds just so I always would have Ren no matter what.
You know, I don't mean to sound like a schnook here, but whenever I hear somebody say that, you know, they look good, it's almost like when I hear people say, well, he's a good-looking corpse. You know, you're going to look good losing. I just never really understood that. I mean, you know.
Well, I think that gets into where some people think that some people play an army because they love the models and they really could care less. They go to tournaments not because they want to be competitive, but they want to play a broad range of armies that they never get to play.
Uh-huh.
You wouldn't believe how many guys I've run into at Adepticon and stuff that have said, you know, look, I just came here to, you know, see the different armies and just, you know, have a good time. Some people don't care. They get into a tournament and they're there because they want variety, not necessarily competition.
No, you're right. And that's one of the reasons why I myself am a polygamist. What?
Gary, this is what happens when he goes off his meds.
I like variety and not confrontation.
Can you focus?
Don't let him talk for a short period of time.
Oh, for God's sakes, I know.
I can't share personal stuff with you guys. This is what drove Randy
you
crazy.
You share too much with us.
To write that stuff down on little sheets of paper.
Tell your doctor.
And then burn them.
All right. Well, good stuff, man. Hey, you know, Steve, good stuff, dude. Great army conversation.
A public service announcement brought to you by Frag Factory 3D Printing. Many of us have thousands of dollars in miniatures, yet we play on flat tables with books and overturned Tupperware to act as our fantasy and sci-fi landscapes. We've all drooled over the tables we see in magazines, lush with beautifully created terrain from all genres.
The crew at Frag Factory 3D Printing want to wipe that drool from your chin and put it firmly on your friends and fellow gamers when they see your setup. Alien landscapes, desert wastelands, futuristic cities, fantasy outposts, elven forests, demonic stronghold, and so much more. Find out what you've been missing by checking us out on Facebook at Frag Factory 3D Printing or send us an email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com. Bring your own files or we will help you find what you've been searching for. Take your gaming to the next level with Frag Factory 3D Printing. We print life into your games. Tell them Grimdark Live sent you, and your first hour of printing is free.
Hey gang, in all seriousness, get your terrain on the table and get it with Frag Factory 3D Printing. And remember, tell them Grimdark Live sent you and they'll give you 1 hour free. You can get them via email at fragfactory3dprinting@gmail.com or their Facebook page, Frag Factory 3D Printing.
Frag Factory 3D Printing, printing life into your games.
Now, back to the show.
We're going to head over to the 40K world and the tournament world, and we're going to be here with our resident philosopher, man, Gary. He's going to be talking to us about Michigan GT and some shit talking. Are we getting into that?
And some what?
Let's hear about it, man. Let's get. So you brought your towel, right?
Yeah, I did bring towel. It's a list that I got basically from Manny Chima, and that's a UK guy. It's 9 broadsides. Essentially, it was not a lot of thinking that went on with it.
Sure.
But it was deceptively able to hold objectives due to the drone units. There's 51 drones in the list. There's 3 units of 11, and then each broadside had a 2 drone unit attached with them. So that's 6 drones. 3, 2 man unit drones, I guess you would call them.
Right.
Well, you have those, which is 9 units of 2, and then which is 18, and then you've got 3 units of 11, which is 31, which math comes out to 51. So basically, you protect all of your broadsides because they have just an insane amount of shooting. And you kill off stuff, and then you send out the little 2-man drone units to go hold objectives, to score objectives, and to screen out. So the 3 rules I had for this army going into it was do well in the movement phase, target priority, and don't get touched. Don't let the broadsides get charged.
Right.
So round one, I look across the table, and there's like 150 orcs. Whoa. And at the end of turn 4, there was like 4 orcs. So that one, of course, went through it. It was pretty good. The highlight of that game was there's a orc called a Big Mech.
Oh, right.
And
it
has a shock attack gun. And if you take a detachment out of Vigilance Defiant, you get it becomes a relic shock attack gun, which means if you roll for the strength. You roll 2d6 for the strength before you shoot it, right?
Sure.
Roll an 11 or 12, it does mortal wounds instead of regular wounds. He didn't do that. So he shot at one of my broadsides. I went to pass it off to a drone on a 2+, save your protocol.
Good, because you have plenty of them.
On a drone, right. And I rolled a 1, and I'm like, I don't want to take D6 damage from this stupid gun. So I used command point to reroll it, and what I roll, folks?
A 1.
There you damn right. 1 in 36 times. With me, it's like every time. I roll a 1, and then he proceeds to roll a 6, and aces 1 broadside.
So did that dice end up in the walk?
Oh, no. It's still there. It's still around, so... I've learned if I pay more for the dice, I tend to give them more chances. but after that, it was more of him trying to get to me. And for those that don't know, Tau, you overwatch on a 5 up when you hit instead of a 6. And the greater good ability means that if you charge on my units, any unit I have within 6 inches of it can overwatch as well.
Got it. So let me just kind of back up here. So what Gary's talking about is he competed in Michigan GT. I'm sure if you guys have been listening to the last couple of shows, you guys knew exactly what he was up to and where he was. And from what I understand, it was one of the biggest events in 40K, the championships that Michigan GT has had with 118, or was it 120 players? I don't remember.
Yeah, 128 signups, 118 showed up. So you had the right. And this isn't an ITC missions. These are custom missions. So you still the cool factor that goes into it. I'll get into those rules as it comes up and goes through it. So Michigan really didn't have any super crazy rules that go to it. Now, so I win that game 50-0. So
Oh, nice. 50-0?
Right. Rolling to hitting it because you do a differential. You both start out with 25 points.
Yeah.
And then you, if I score five more than you, the final score was 30 to 20.
I got you.
Okay. So you max out at 50. So if you score 25 more, then it goes up to those. So that was round one. Round two, I played against an individual that I played at American Team Championships. We played against their team. I didn't play against him, but I played against a member of their team. So we sat down and played. Now, I'm going to give you a little lesson about myself. I'm a huge college football fan, way before I ever knew 40K existed, right? From Oklahoma. So bear with me. So Oklahoma, Texas, huge rivalry, Red River Showdown, all of this. Been talking smack back and forth all week on Facebook to Texas fans. That game started at noon. Okay.
People were taking pictures of your phone while you're watching the game.
So as soon as my game was over with the orc player and I did up the tally, I ran upstairs to the room. It's like 12:30. So I got to watch 45 minutes of the game because the next round started at 1:15. So I come running back down. I go to the table and I look across and I see three Eldar Flyers, three Night Spinners, three Warp Punters, I want to say. I probably have that name wrong. Fire Prisms. Sorry. Three Fire Prisms. Did a handful of characters. Didn't have any troops. I was like, okay, well, I know what I have to do here. I could not stop looking at my phone. I said, you know what? I was on my opponent's turn. I used technology and actually had the game playing on my phone. And I set it on a piece of terrain. I looked at my opponent and said, I'm not going to slow the game down at all. And I was like, I promise, if anything, this is to your advantage. I lost that game by 1 point.
Well, do you think it was the Oklahoma game or do you think it was his ability?
Positive that it was Oklahoma games. I think I could have won that game by like 4 or 5 points. My opponent didn't disagree with me either because everything in his army had fly.
Right.
All 95 broadsides, which is 148 missile shots, I get plus one to hit anything with a fly keyword because of an upgrade they have.
Okay.
So, right. So I'm knocking stuff out of there and I'm watching that. But more importantly, Oklahoma won. So that's better. So now we move on to game three. After I lost him by 1 point, great guy. We move on to game three, which is against a Astro Militarum player.
Okay.
I did learn something about the limitations of my gray matter. If I focus on a football game, and I focus on a 40K game for 3 hours, I develop a headache.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're getting older now, Gary. You can't multitask like you used to.
And so going to there, not going to make excuses. He was a very good player. He knew his army better than I did mine. I haven't been playing Tau that long. And this list only had like 7 games down. But to be honest, it has 3 rules. Move, screen, don't get touched. Right. Well, I moved. I didn't screen. And I got touched. So... do you remember with Bulgren, what Bulgren are?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
So he's got a back in the older meta, Astro Militarum had Bulgren, which if you put them together and you give them a certain number of shields and cover psychic powers, they go to like a one-up save. So you actually have...
You're talking
about
Ogrens. Ogrens get this?
Bulgren.
Oh, yeah, okay, gotcha. Okay.
Ogrens, but they have shields.
Okay, all right. You know what? I've always called. Okay, I got you now. I thought Bulgrens was kind of like a slang term. I thought Ogrens were just okay. I'm with you now.
Right. So he had I think 9 of those. He had set up front, and we went through and started playing. Like I said, Ed Hiddick went through it. Very good opponent. Very tactical opponent. Very skilled opponent. Somebody I really needed to be on my toes with. You know, I still think I could have won that game. It wasn't the list. It was my play. The list had no issues. It was the general running it. So I didn't put up screens out front. He had 2 Punisher tanks, which comes to 80 shots. So he's able to shoot at and kill off drones fairly efficiently. He did have a knight. I went first in that game, and I killed the knight before he got to do – no, I went second. I killed the knight, but the knight had already killed off some drones and so forth. Punisher – one Punisher guy came up, not two. 40 shots, because if he doesn't move, he shoots twice. Killed off drones. So essentially what it boiled down to, and we were on hammer and anvil. For those of you who don't know, that's the short board edges is where you come on.
Sure.
And the furthest one to be away from them. And my list has a kill range of 36 inches. We had two Lehman Russes that can set back at 72 inches away and shoot. So after he's able to, like, ace off the drones, after Bulgrins made in, they touched me. I didn't make a round of shooting, killed off drones. I got down to, like, four broadsides. I had nine, but now these tanks can sit at the end of the table, shoot across it. I can't do anything about it. I can't shoot at them, nothing. I can only try to get out of the line of sight, which isn't that easy to do. And one of the tanks had a relic battle cannon on it, which is three flat damage. So essentially every time he shot, he was killing a broadside and a half, which is bad for me.
Yeah.
So I should have played that better. Shot? Yeah, because they get 2d6 shots.
Sure.
He's hitting on twos, rerolling ones because he's tank commander.
Okay.
I'd be three, rerolling ones.
What's their
strength? Eight. So he's wounding on
four. Oh, there you go. Yeah.
And I have a 2-up save, which now goes to a 4-up save. So you figure 3.5 shots, he gets 7 shots. He's going to hit with 6 of those. He's going to wound with 5 of those, right around that, 4 to 5. I'm going to make half my saves. If I fail 3, that's one dead broadside, another one takes 3 wounds.
That's the math. Yeah, you're right. Okay.
So I learned that, and I learned, okay, that's a fail point to the army that I didn't think about was being outranged. So I only got 4 points in that one, so he beat me 46-4.
So at the end of day one, you're what, 1-2?
1-2.
Gotcha. Okay.
Bottom. So I get some Advil, regroup, and here's one of the coolest things ever. Bill Kim, who's been on our show,
awesome guy.
One of the guys who runs Mission GT. We were on the same team. We run Gentleman Gaming. I'm on Team Battle Brothers now, back and forth. That's for different reasons. He had sent out an invite to probably 20, 25 people that basically all Gentleman Gaming or that he knows from the area. And we went to his house. He had catered barbecue turkey, ribs, brisket, coleslaw, all this stuff. And we all went there, had some grub, and talked 40K for 2-3 hours with some of the best players in the world. Got done with that, went back to the room. Oh, by the way, my dentist, Elliot, was on the trip with me. That's who I had roomed with. We had a discussion, and I started to feel better, went to sleep, got it the next day, and said, okay, I got to score, try and get 100 points. I need to get 50s on my next two games because my goal at a minimum was to leave there with best out. That was the minimum. 4-1, I would have said really good. 3-2 is what I expected. Right now I'm behind on the ball on that. I'm 1-2. So
you got to win your next two.
Yep. So starting the fourth round, I look across the table and I see Tyranids. I'm like, all right, I know Tyranids very well. Here is where the wonky mission stuff came into play.
The custom missions that were at Michigan GT.
Right. Okay. So typically I would be like, this is no problem at all. I'm going to kill the Flyrants and all the little stuff's just going to get murdered. Right. Okay. So for the first.
Sounds like a good plan.
Yeah. Well, I know Tyranids very well. Very, very well. So for this mission, if you were outside of 12 inches, you get +1 to your save. If you're outside of 24 inches, you get +2 to your save.
So it's almost like they're giving you extra save for long range or something?
Right. It's like a hurricane. It's like this big huge storm that's going on, effective visibility. So for the first two turns.
Okay.
So he has temper gallants, which are toughness 3 models with a 6-up save that wind up having a 4-up save that are fearless.
Huh.
So now I'm having to do twice as many shots as I normally would have to clear those out. So I stick to the plan. I kill all 3 Flyrants. I kill the big bug. I kill all kinds of stuff. But mission-oriented games and Tyranids excel at that because they have so many bodies to hold objectives. So when that one boiled down, I won by 2 points.
All right, so now you're 2-2.
I'm 2-2, 27-23. But Michigan's battle points, not records.
Oh.
Right. So I go look at the standings. I'm like, all right. The other Tau player, there's one Tau player ahead of me. He's playing the 3 Riptides with commanders, which I have that list sitting on a tree next to me that I'm playing with Saturday to try it out. And now that Iron Hands got nerfed, it's even back to being somewhat viable.
Okay.
So I go over and I see his army. It's painted well. I'm like, damn, I think I still got him on paint, though. Michigan is probably 40 to 50% paint score as well.
Oh, wow. So it's a pretty high composite scoring ratio.
It's very hobby oriented.
Okay.
They do that, but the battle is all done through the BCP app, all of it.
Oh, I like that. Okay. That's kind of a nice compromise.
And what you score on the app is what you get for ITC. Then they add your paint score to your battle points, and that puts you in your overall placings for how you do at the event. They do have best general, which is just battle points. So I'm looking over, it's like, fuck, these things are painted fairly decently, you know. And I go and round five, I'm like, all right, I have to get 50 points here. Don't give me LL flyers or demons or anything that's negative one to hit. Oh, that's the other thing. His whole army was basically negative one to hit the Tyranid guy and getting plus two to a save. So makes me not very as efficient.
Oh, yeah.
What range plus two to save. That went against, went through it, had a good time. And then last round, I look at the thing and I go, he's playing with Gene Stealer Colt. So.
Well, you should have that one all day long.
I do. But he also has Astra Militarum as allies because he can do that. They can
corrupt them? They bring them in?
Yep, exactly. That's okay. What it is.
Traitor guard, gotcha.
He's got two Punishers, which these tanks have 20 shots apiece. If they don't move, it's 40 shots apiece. But the range is only 24.
Yeah, that got serious.
Yeah, those can clear out drones. They're going to do jack to a broadside. But he needs to kill drones, so I can't save the protocol. I pass off wounds to him. And he has a Bane Hammer. It's a big, huge tank with a trimmer cannon and all the guns on it. And then he has about 1,200 points of GSC. So he's like, well, this is going to be vastly goes who on goes first. In my mind, I'm like, well, not if you deploy correctly and stay out of my range. Then move up and shoot me. So he puts his on the line. I go first. First turn, I kill both Punishers. Second turn, I take the Bane Hammer down to two wounds left. At this point, he's like, okay, my Bane Hammer's sitting on sixes. I have no way to kill drones. And I have 1,200 points of GSC left. It's just infantry that's going to die as soon as I'm bringing it in because my drones are everywhere and he can't get close to broadsides because I've moved correctly and screened.
Yeah. So now how many drones at this point do you, because you've lost how many drones at this point, if you can recall, do you have right now going into game five?
Well, game five, I have 51 drones.
Gotcha. Okay.
After his turn, I had 40 drones.
Okay. That's what I was asking. Okay.
He only killed 11.
Okay.
So he only killed 11. He was going to lose all of his capability to kill drones. He could assault them, but if he assaults them, he kills four drones, and then I shoot him to death. Because all the drones have flying can fall back. You can't wrap them.
Okay.
So turn easily, he concedes, so that goes to 50 points.
Oh, wow. Right. So he gave you full points?
He conceded gives you full points.
Yeah.
So that puts me at 50 points. So now I immediately go over to where my competition's playing. And he's playing against Custodes and AgMech, right?
Right.
I'm watching him play, and I obviously can't coach the Custodes player and that kind of stuff, but I'm like, shoot the drone, shoot the drone, shoot the drones in my head. And he just keeps consistently shooting at Riptides and let the guy pass off that. So I'm looking and looking. I am ahead by 33 points from my competition. I'm like, okay, as long as he doesn't table this guy or get 40-some-odd points, I think I'm going to get best tile because he didn't have a display board. So I'm up on him 10 points from paint.
There you go.
Okay. And he winds up winning by 3 or 4. So I wind up finishing 31st overall out of 118, but getting best tile because I beat him on battle points and paint. So for best towel, I got a nice cool mug that says Frederick Peter. Hold on. It says 40K Championship, the Greater Good Champion. It's got a little Michigan GT symbol on the other side of it. I won an Orc Codex. I won a set of Orc cards. And I started a apocalypse box.
So I got you did pretty good though. Looks like your overall score was 215 points.
Yep, 215.
Yeah.
So I was on the first page. So if you look, you get your battle points, which was 155.
Right.
And then paint, I think mine was 70.
Your paint here, Gary Frank, Tau Empire, Team Battle Brothers, you were 60.
So essentially, I put it checking everything in a block. If you look at the very top, the guy who won overall.
145?
Yeah, but he only had 169 battle points.
Yeah. And look at playing Slaanesh.
Yeah, look at third place.
Iron Hands.
226 battle points, but did not win best overall.
Hey, there's Team Happy with his Imperium.
Yep, that's Aaron.
Yep, I see that a lot.
And Elliot Levy, that's my dentist for Gentleman Gaming. He third and got best orcs. But anyway, yeah, it's a great, great time to go through. And Jeremy, I got to give him some props to him, too. He went undefeated with Sisters of Battle.
There you go. Steve, did that wake you up?
Sure did.
He was 4-0-1.
So let me try to find, where's Jeremy right now? I don't see him on the list here.
Top 16. I think he's a 16th player.
Is he really?
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Yep, 16th.
Well, Gary, isn't he like the best Sisters player in the world?
Pretty close. He had 185 battle points and 70 on paint. So,
wow, pretty good.
Yeah, he finished it well. A lot of the people from there.
Yeah, there he is right there, Gentleman Gaming. 255, 70, 185. Jeremy, nice job, man, if you're out there listening. Great job, buddy.
And his army was designed very, very well for the missions to play against. He played against the Iron Hands army before it had the nerf, and for practice, and still won by 10 points because he's able to play the mission. He didn't kill anything, but he got cards and stuff all the time throughout the game. So he was doing very well on that. But anyway, had a great time when we went through there and played infield. Notice Wayne, the Tau Sep guy, second or third from the bottom.
Right? Yeah, yep. I'll pull it up. He had a little bigger.
Yeah, he had me in paint, but nowhere near me in battle points. The guy on the bottom was the guy that was actually leading going into the last round.
This Adrian Mitchell?
Yep. Arden Mitchell. Yep. But
Arden his paint, Mitchell, yeah.
Paint was 55.
Wow.
His battle point was 149. So they do a lot of hobbying, and that's where I really think the AOS crowd should go to that.
So do you think
the AOS community blows 40K away when it comes to painting and model presentation and being proud?
My stuff.
A handful of 40Kers that do a phenomenal job, i.e. Eric Gibbs, Joe, anybody with over 100, but there's only five of them.
Yeah, they probably started painting fantasy miniatures.
Or army theme, right. the Slaanesh guy, his board was phenomenal, was gorgeous. He had a warp gate in the back with a demon, Slaanesh demon coming out with whips painted. Gorgeous. Him and the Dark Eldar player, I didn't know who was going to win that one, but you have to go. It's fantastic. The price support's great. The hotel is in the same building as the convention, so you never have to leave the convention other than get food. And there's plenty of room. It's fantastic. I will never miss this event, ever.
Really? All right. Well, you know what? I think what I'm going to do.
The last year, the first year I went, it was on the me and my wife's anniversary weekend.
Okay.
And she's like, and I said, I'll make it up to you. I'm going. So I went, then we went on our anniversary a different weekend. Our anniversary was on the 16th. So I could have did something that weekend, but we're going to wait and go through and do it. It's a great event. It's not going to get bigger because he wants to keep it where it's at. And the reason for that is.
I remember him saying that on the show.
He can offer more prize support, and it's a very good event. You got to go. You got to go check it out.
So as a side note, how big was the, if you recall, how big was the AOS there?
AOS, I think, was 60-ish people.
It's a healthy tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah. It may have been a little bit more. I'll be able to find those out. I know Randy had a good time every time I talked to him. So other than the drive, and I told him next time, just I'll come by and pick you up.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Had that one. It was a great time, and I would go back. And nothing wrong with the list. It was me operating it. Watching a football game is kind of difficult.
Well, yeah. Multitasking is probably not a good idea when you're in a major tournament.
You know, but anyway, to go through that, I'm still not sold completely on what it is that I'm playing, because every time I play something that's not Tyranids, I feel like I'm cheap.
You know, it's funny. You just literally took the sentence out of my mouth almost. What I was going to say to you was, you never seem, you know, and you and I have been talking about your every other army besides Nids, or Nids in some type, Gene Stealers, whatever it might be.
Right.
And you know something, honestly, you never really have the enthusiasm in your voice when you talk about those armies. You never really, what's funny about it is you have a different attitude and embracement towards your Nids. Or the ilk thereof, than you do any other army. And it's just been, ever since I've met you, it's been the same thing.
They're by far and away my favorite. And I will more than likely go back to that.
Well, I'm going to say more than likely. You're definitely going to go back to them. You always do.
Well, the issue is finding something that's competitive, because I want something that I feel like can go 4-1. I didn't take Tau because of my favorite. I took Tau because it's safe and it's effective.
Yeah, but you also don't seem to me to be, I mean, you're a competitive gamer. You're a competitive guy in by nature. I get that. But you don't seem to me to be one of these, I like to call them, you know, meta jerks. That's not you. That's not who you are. I mean, is that a fair statement, Steve?
Oh, absolutely it is.
I mean, honestly, so I don't really think it's just that, too. I mean, from the competitive standpoint, yeah. I mean, you don't want to go in there and take a shellacking every time you roll dice on a table. But
we had that conversation there when you're amongst the group, and like, well, you should just do this. I said, you know what? I could afford to do that. You know, go chase the meta and go out of that. But here's how I know what I should be playing with. When I look at Iron Hands and they looked at the stuff that was broken, the first thing I did is said, how can I beat this with Tyranids? It wasn't, what am I going to do to beat this with Tau, or what am I going to do to beat this with Gene Stealer Colt, or whatever the case may be. It's like, what can I do to beat this with Tyranids? And I mean, he was like, oh, I put Hive Guard with the, not the Impaler cannons, but the anti-vehicle cannons in drop pods, bring them down and unload those into there. That's how I would do that. So now I'm like, well, that's the first thing I go to. Maybe that's what I should be doing. Now I'm presenting the challenge with that, with our venture that we're going on. It was Grimdark Live. I don't want to just have Tyranids to play with whenever we have a narrative campaign and all of this. I want to have variety.
No, and I think that's the smart way to do it. I mean, even a schnook like myself in 40K, I've got my AdMech. I've got about 3,000 points of AdMech, and I've got about 65,843 points in Knights. I have no idea. You know, honestly, I just found, and I know this sounds, I'm going to say this very clearly, I just found 6 unbuilt Knights. 6, Gary. 6 more. In my basement.
Thank you, Vincent.
But that's, you got a problem.
You know what's funny? I think they're multiplying like gremlins. I don't remember getting these. And I don't think
you have a problem. When you have too much crack to smoke, you have a problem.
So, buddy, I'm telling you what.
I'm just saying.
That's
an analogy, folks. Don't go swatting his house. So
I got to tell you, man, I don't know where the hell I'm getting these Knights from, but I'm getting
God,
them
you're
going to
be as bad as Randy pretty soon.
I think in the Knight category, I'm worse. And in wearing women's clothes and lingerie. He's definitely worse
than
that.
Oh, boy, you had to go there.
What are you talking about? It's your guys' fault. The poor guy was normal to you guys, you know, got into all this trouble and worried him sick.
If anything, whenever he was with us, we removed the stress that he had. I don't know what you did after that, but.
Exactly.
Just saying. I don't
know. He was mumbling something about, you know, the Lansing Lancers, and he was just running down the street. I don't know, something was just strange.
I think you have a shirt with that on it.
So. All right.
So with the clothes that I had a great time, and yes, I will probably be going back to Tyranids and trying to solve that problem, because I can't preach one thing and then not do that.
Folks, let me just speak for Gary. The probably part that he just uttered. No chance of that. He's definitely going back to Tyranids. I just want to just say that for, you know, because I know that, you know, Gary's a very modest guy, so I'll just speak for him. He's absolutely
a modest guy.
As sure as cops is robbers and saints is sinners, Gary's going back to Tyranids.
Yeah, not problem.
Love. That is a true story. So with that, I got one more thing I want to touch on.
Sure.
We're getting towards the end of this. Just like in any sport, whenever you have something that's the goal, I'm speaking for 40K, the vast majority of what we play now is ITC missions. That caters to one style of list that can hold something and kill something each turn. Does not really cater to something that's flexible to go out and accomplish tasks as they're given.
Okay.
So I really believe that we need to go through and revamp how ITC missions are done. Reese, Frankie, this is a message to you, and I know we know each other. And yes, your designs are good, but they are now starting to create a meta that is first turn oriented and very much heavy shooting and assault and mobile armies and things that go out and take objectives and whatnot, which is what a lot of this game is based off of, is suffering from that. I all mad respect for going out and creating something that needed to be done because a regular GW mission was taking like 5 hours to complete. We're not at that point anymore to where it takes that long to complete. So please consider revamping those and utilizing the new rules that Games Workshop has created for using Maelstrom. Because as popular as you are, Games Workshop does not create mission or rules and models for ITC missions. They create it for GW missions.
Sure.
So we're only using probably a third of what's at our disposal to make things competitive. And if nobody believes me or wants to complain about it or whatnot, just go to 40K stats and look at what's won the entire year. Show me a highly interactive, mobile, go out and do things army out of all of that. You're not really going to see it.
And this is, you know, I want you to hold that thought because as we get towards the end of the show, which we're not too far from now, I've kind of broken up the question of the day and separated it for each one of you, Gary and Steve. So, but Gary, hold that thought because it's actually going to pin pretty well with the question I have for you.
Hey, Steve, did you get a memo on this question of the day stuff?
I didn't.
Does he ever send out memos?
Apparently not. Oh, wait, I take that. He does it right before the show starts.
Let me ask you a question. Is that memo thing, does that require penicillin? Because it's kind of itchy.
No, it usually requires a keyboard and some sort of technical IT skill.
Oh, so that's the problem. I have this connection between the seat cushion and the keyboard has been kind of rough lately.
Right, I know, because you type by slapping your hands. So that's typically doesn't work.
I'm just an overly excitable person, man.
Oh, no.
I will attempt to answer said question of the day when it comes up to the best of my ability.
There you go. All right, well, let's move on. Let me close out a little bit of a conversation I was having earlier this week regarding a particular army in Cities of Sigmar. We're going to switch gears and kind of go back really quick here to Age of Sigmar. I'm kind of throwing a list up here on an army for the build for Greywater Fastness, one of the cities in Cities of Sigmar. And this is an all dwarf list. And I think one of the mistakes that folks are making with this book is they're trying to mix and match. They're trying to, you know, put lists together that maybe they want, but aren't that competitive, and then getting upset or getting mad that the list that they're putting out there isn't doing very well. So if you notice the list I have up here, it's all dwarves. But you know something interesting, unlike what you're seeing with a lot of lists that are Cities of Sigmar, no artillery. And I want to get into this real quick, because I think right now this is the biggest fool's gold with any one of these lists and how you're going to make it successful. So this list here is a 2,000-point standard list playing all Dwarden list in the realm of Gyron, Cities of Sigmar, Greywater Fastness. And no artillery. And there's a reason for this. Simply put, this army is obviously slow as a sprained ankled snail. This thing is not going to get very far at all. And the artillery choice that we have for this particular army in Cities of Sigmar, quite honestly, the artillery, it's poop. It really is bad. The artillery, I think they really did I think it's one of the worst things in the entire book. I'm just going to go out there and say that. I've read the book.
They're poop.
I said poop. Yep.
What, eight?
Close. Yeah. But yes, it is poop. And so there's only, with the artillery, there's only two choices to choose from, the Hellblaster and the Hellstorm. And I want to talk about this briefly before I get into why I made up this list the way it is. So the Hellblaster and the Hellstorms. With GW getting rid of our cannons, bolt throwers, and what I like to call the good artillery, we're left with these two point fillers, I guess is the best way to put it. And given that the Hellblaster comes with such a big risk of doing nothing but damaging itself, and in some cases, math hammering it as high as 15% on the misfire, and also with the Hellstorm's greater range, I still would never recommend taking the Hellstorm rocket battery either. So either artillery choice, I think, is garbage. And, you know, I get it. Artillery is so wishlisty. You know, you wish it'll work out, but it never really does. I mean, Hellstorms need to regain indirect fire, period. They have to go back to D6 damage or drop 30 points. You know, their current output is just not reliable or threatening enough for the point value, even with a Cogsmith nearby. Not very good. The Greywater Fastness Battalion, we're only in your first shooting phase. Are you able to shoot twice? I think is, you know, kind of lousy for the points that you're going to pay for it. So, as you can see, in place of the artillery, I put in gyro bombers. Now, again, why I didn't put in gyrocopters, they're really only going to kill one and only one unit. So I guess pick that unit and murderize it, and then after that, they're going to get killed. Gyrocopters, I think, for, you know, are 70 points a pop. For 10 more points at 80 points, you can get gyro bombers and really get your money's worth and give your opponent something to have to deal with other than your units on the table. You know, for a lot of you guys kind of listen to me run through this, there was a guy, and I always called him when he was on our show early on back in the day, we always referred to him as the Ayatollah of Dicerola. He was MC1 Gamer, and I know that he's kind of been kind of retired, but he used to do these awesome unlocking videos, he used to call them. Remember those, Steve or Gary? Did you ever see those?
Yeah, they were great.
MC1 Gamers unlocking videos.
I have not.
I think he did 40K ones also. But the guy, if I was MC1 Gamer right now, and if the guy's out there listening, if he's still even in the hobby, I hope I can do him justice with this. I'm going to call this his unlocking, if you will. The guy was awesome. If you ever get a chance to go back and listen to some of his old stuff, better than anything that's currently out there. MC1 Gamer just did a great job. But again, I went with gyro bombers in this list. You know, gyro bombers are great as objective grabbers. They're fast and they can fly. And this army, being that it's mostly dwarves, is very slow at 4 inches. And like I said, these gyro bombers can do a pretty significant amount of damage to your enemy units as they fly over them. They can drop, in this case, I've got three of them. You can drop 3d6 on a 2+. It does d3 mortal wounds to the unit that you pick. So pretty darn good. And that's a normal movement. So you can retreat them out of combat in the movement phase, move them over an enemy unit, and they bomb them. So you can put them back by your Cogsmith, the guy up here, for 60 points within 3 inches, and he can heal D3 wounds in that unit. So
you said Cog, right?
I'm sorry?
You said Cog, right?
I did say Cogsmith. Yeah, that's in the later show. But so I have a Warden King here as a general. His trade is Drill Master, Artifact, Steam Piston Plate Mail. And we'll get into, you know, that, or you can look it up. I'm not going to get into a lot of the minutiae of the details here because everyone's got the book. Two Rune Lords. These guys are great. They're priests. They can dispel just like a wizard. And they can cast some pretty awesome prayers. And a Cogsmith. He's really there to keep your gyro bombers alive because you want to keep these gyro bombers on the move. You've got your long beards here with great weapons. You got three units of 10. They're going to have your single attack with 3s by 3s, -1 damage 1. You're getting that rend that you want. And flanking in right behind them are your Iron Drakes. Now, these guys are your shooty little bastards. These guys have basically two weapons. Their unit captain can carry something called a Grudge Hammer Torpedo. And this is really where you want to keep these guys in MSUs or small units of their minimum size, which is 10, because it doesn't say 1 per 10, but it says one in every unit can have a Grudge Hammer Torpedo. You place these guys right behind your long beards, and now you're cooking with gas, because these things are 3s by 3s, -2 damage d3, and it's 20 inches, while the rest of your unit is doing 3s by 3s, -1 damage 1. So a lot of great shooting that can be right behind your long beards to help them when they're in the fight of their life. I got a big fat group of your Ironbreakers. These are the little buggers that have the 3+ save. You put these guys on an objective or you know, blocking another enemy unit from getting to an objective, they're going to be there all day. And, of course, you've got your hammers that are kind of your tough guys of the entire army, if you will. In last edition, they weren't that good. But I think they got their points right with this unit. And these guys being at 2 attacks apiece, 3s by 3s, -1, -1, making these guys your honored retinue for your general. It gives your general a little bit of a better buff when it comes to absorbing wounds because you can pass those things off. So this right here, if I had to honestly, you know, say what this list would be in a major tournament, and I want to hear both from Steve and Gary on what your 2 cents in a tin can on this list is. I would say that I could probably go at, you know, anywhere between 3-2 and 4-1 with this list. I think the gyro bombers are going to offer up enough of a distraction to your opponent that they're going to have to deal with them, because the nifty thing about gyro bombers is, like I said, they have a real great ability to really go after singular units. Now, their rule says you can only pick one unit that you fly over. That can be a character. That can be a unit that maybe another, you know, one of your units is fighting and having a little bit of trouble with. But you can roll one dice for each model in that unit, which in this case would be 3. And you can drop 3 dice on a 2+. The enemy unit suffers D3 mortal wounds. And they do that with every movement phase. So if you move them, if you run them, if you retreat them in the movement phase, they can drop bombs. So the beauty about this unit is they can bomb a unit, block out another unit, retreat over back to your cogsmith, keep that cogsmith located somewhere centrally located where those copters can get back to him within 3 inches so he can heal them and send them right back out again. Complete, just seek and destroy the whole time. And the rest of your unit is hardy enough to where I think it's going to give any army out there in the Age of Sigmar world, I would say that second to the Fire Slayers, these are your number 2 stunties right here. So, Steve, I'll throw it to you, man. What are your thoughts on this particular army build, Greywater Fastness, Cities of Sigmar, Dwarden?
I totally agree. It's probably a 3-2 army. Okay. Depending upon the level of competition.
Well, I'm basing everything on a major GT, Age of Sigmar, okay, so LVO, Michigan GT.
Our standard,
yes.
Yeah, if we're using that as our standard, then yeah, it's definitely a 3-2 army. I think, depending, I mean, if I were playing that army with my trolls, the helicopters would be bombarded every chance I got with the rocks, because they're going to cause mortal wounds and they're going to knock those things down right out of the air. The minute you get rid of a unit, like if you have 3 helicopters, or what are they called, gyro bombers?
Gyro bombers, yeah.
And they come
the twirly whirlies, man.
They come 3 to a unit.
Yeah, well, they come 1 to a unit, but you can build them up to a max of 3.
Max of 3. And how many wounds do they have?
They have 5 wounds apiece.
5 wounds apiece. So the minute you take out 1 or 2 of them, they're going to pretty much be useless. I would have no problem playing against that army, but
yeah, they do have a secondary weapon at 20 inches. It's a clatter gun.
Yeah,
4s by 3, -1, -1, 4 attacks. So that's literally what you're getting 12 shots on a
you
unit
know,
as well.
I know this is the story of Cities of Sigmar, that we're taking old armies and making them new. I can honestly say I have zero interest in this form of dwarves. I know that a lot of people love this hearkening back to the old days and the old traditional dwarf army, but I would be bored out of my mind playing this army, and I probably would not even enjoy playing against it.
Yeah, I'm not debating that. What I'm saying is, when I'm seeing a lot of people on the boards, and I want to get to Gary, you know, whatever you can comment on this too, I'd like to hear that, because a lot of the people on the boards are trying this, you know, I would call it the...
They're trying to rebuild the old dwarf army, basically, with these new rules.
Well, not necessarily that. What they're trying to do is, you know that scene in Helm's Deep and Lord of the Rings when, you know, they're all there and he says, we'd be proud to fight alongside men and dwarves again, you know, that...
Men and elves, yeah.
Yeah. You know, the fact of the matter is, that's what people are trying to do, and I see it not working very well. And I think I see a lot of frustrated people out there with this, you know... And unfortunately, yeah, this all dwarf army is boring, but I think it's a hell of a lot more effective than if you have a small mixed bag of, you know, Free Guild great swords, a small mixed bag of handgunners, maybe a mixed bag of,
well,
Iron Breakers.
I think time will tell what kind of what these mixed armies are going to look like and how effective they're going to be on the battlefield. I'm not saying this dwarf army wouldn't be effective. I'm just saying that it's just, to me, I don't see a lot of people playing this. I mean, I know we have guys in our own group that play these dwarves and they love them and they think the world of them, but I just don't see this being a thing. I don't see this being an army that people are going to want to play. I think they're going to migrate towards the better builds in the cities book, which of course we'll be talking about, you know,
very soon
in future shows. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's just like I said, I wanted to kind of share this because I know a couple of people were asking me about it. And I said,
sure.
Well, you know,
yeah.
Check out the show. I got an idea. And this is what I wanted to present because, you know, look, if you will admit, just like we said at the beginning of the show, we talked about, you know, the salamanders or we talked about the orcs, you know, dwarves fall into that very niche cult kind of gamer group.
Yes, they
do. People that play, I have a friend of mine, a guy
people that play
with.
Dwarves play dwarves.
Well, I have a friend of mine that has literally started playing dwarves in 4th edition Warhammer Fantasy Battles, and it's the only army he has ever played. He's never once played anything else. Nothing
else. That's
great. Else.
I think that's awesome.
And to be honest with you, it's that thing, like we just talked about, salamanders and whatnot. You know, it doesn't matter the game platform. Everyone has those kind of cults. But Gary, let me throw it back to you. I mean, any thoughts on this? I mean, I know it's Harry Potter, but any thoughts?
Well, it seems focused and somewhat durable, which to me is the two requirements that I would consider something to be competitive. So 3-2, 4-1 is not out of the realms of possibility, depending on the general of it and repetitions that the person had playing with it. So Honestly, you will do better with something that you love. So if they're the dwarf player, like the person that you had mentioned, that's all they've ever played, they're going to do very well with that. So, and I fully believe that you can function and do well based on who was playing it.
Sure.
I don't know about all that, but from what you described, it seems like that it is focused and it is somewhat durable.
Yeah.
And if they ever make dwarfs not durable, you need to stop playing because that's BS.
Yeah, they're no longer dwarves or gnomes.
So
there you go, man. So that's it. So now we're heading up to the question of the day. And as I kind of said before I did my little part here, I kind of thought about the question of the day and I thought about its relevance. And I thought, you know what? We're not really hitting on all points of the show. And I've always wanted to try to keep the question of the day relevant to everything we've talked about. So I've dissected it. It's two questions. So folks, you're getting two questions today. And I'm going to throw it out there to Steve. And then I'm going to throw it out there to Gary. So obviously, one question is going to be geared more towards Age of Sigmar. The question towards Gary is obviously going to be geared more towards 40K. So here's the question for Steve, and both of the same relevance, Age of Sigmar. Are the new Cities of Sigmar points, I should say the new Cities of Sigmar battalions, worth the points, or can you get by without them, and why?
Well, if we're taking a look at just the one I mentioned tonight, the Hammerhall Lancers, I definitely think it's worth the points. And and I also think that you can get by without them. The bottom line is, it's what you want to do with your army and what you want it to do at certain points in the game. I mean, you need battalions to do that one thing in the game that's gonna put you over the top. In the case of the Hammerhall Lancers, yes, I think that that's a great battalion, and I think that it can literally make your army a two-drop army.
Okay, but I guess, and I don't want to seem like a weenie on this, but I want to get a definitive answer on this. Overall, the whole high and low on this.
Overall, I'm using battalions.
Okay.
If I'm playing Cities of Sigmar, I'm using battalions.
Okay,
so you're going to use it for your Phoenicum.
Yeah.
I think that I'm using it. If I ever played the Hammerhall Lancers, I'm playing that battalion, obviously. yes, I think the battalions are necessary in the city's book. I think they make the armies better.
Okay, I like it. I like it. Gary.
Yes.
Same kind of idea based off the show of what we talked about here with 40K. So question of the day for you. You know, over the past year, you know, and really the whole which army is going to be at the top for 40K really kind of started to escalate, as I seem to recall, back in May of 2019, you know, May of this year.
Okay.
And at that time, if my memory serves me right, I think it was Astra Militarum that was kind of one of the best out there, and that was Imperium. And I think Necrons, I think, and Tau were kind of, you know, and Tyranids seemed to be in that mix for Xenos at the time. And of course, Chaos Marines came out with some of their new, I think they tried to make, I think Chaos Marines were, I think at that point, disappointing. But I want to ask you this, as far as, here, as we stand right here, the middle of October, we got November, we got December. Through the remaining portion of 2019 and edging into, you know, the foreseeable future into 2020 with the nerf that, not nerf, but, you know, the FAQ that happened with Iron Hands, with the salamanders that are coming out, give me the top army in your prediction. We're going to write this down. In Imperium, Eldari, Xenos. And that's everything, right? And then Chaos.
That'd be Chaos, Imperial, and Xenos.
Okay, so let's go from Imperium first. Who is going to be from this point, as we're talking now, to the end? Best Imperium.
Does that have to be, like, if I say Space Marines, that's pick a particular chapter?
I'll let you pick that.
So I'll say Space Marines, and for the bonus point, Pat, I will take, I'm trying not to be a homer because it's my favorite out of them. I'm going to go with Salamanders.
Okay.
Because I believe they're going to bring some stratagems that make them durable, and the rumor mill is if they touch you, you're basically going to get blindered.
So, okay. Now, I can pretty much guess the Xenos one.
Well...
And by the way, I want to put this caveat in there just because the more I learn about 40K, the more I'm trying to test my knowledge against your wealth of knowledge. When I say Tyranids, Gene Stealer cults and Tyranids are two separate. They're separate.
Well, they can be allied together, but yeah, they're separate. They'd be the forces of the hive mind.
Well, I guess for my question on which army, you can't say both.
Okay, so pure-wise, probably still going to be Tau for Xenos.
Oh, okay. All right, Tau.
Because how efficient they are.
Okay.
They don't have a lot of fail points.
Okay.
And they have traditionally always been really, really good at one thing, and that is killing Marines.
Okay, so you think as far as Xenos all together, even when we're talking about the Eldari, the Inari, the Craft World, the Drukhari, and the other one. Who's the other one? The clowns.
It's out. And for
Chaos,
it's going to be Nurgle.
Okay, that really took me through a loop. That wasn't even on my mind. Now, are you saying Nurgle demons, or are you saying the...
Nurgle demons. Simply because they provide the best screen in all of 40K, and they can produce a lot of mortal wounds, and they may not have high rend, but when you do fail a save, you take a truckload of damage.
All right.
I'm going to change that.
I'm going to
say it's going to be combat chaos with like Lord Discordance and Mortarion or Magnus because it's more popular. So it'll dominate more. Nurgle's not as popular because it's boring to play. So I'm going to go with Monster Mash Chaos.
All right, I'm putting that down, Monster Mash. So what we're going to do is we're going to revisit this in, say, what, end of January. So I got to go back to...
Adepticon.
Okay, fine. All right, fine. After Adepticon, fair? All right.
That would be the end of the 2019 season.
Fine.
And the beginning of the 2020. So right after Adepticon, we can go up to that. So, all right, before that.
Okay, then you got to do me one favor, Imperium. You got to pick one: Space Marines or Sal. Or are you saying Salamanders as far as a Space Marine?
Salamanders, yes.
I got you. Okay, good. All right, good. Fair enough. Then
he actually wrote that down.
Oh, no, no. So what I have here, folks, and we're going to be testing this at the end of the 2019 season. We got Salamanders, i.e. Space Marines, Tau, and we got Combat Chaos, the Monster Mash list. That's what we have as far as Gary's pick. And, you know, and honestly, you know, Steve, going back to your standpoint as far as battalions, I have to tend to agree with you. I really fell in love with battalions with the Beast of Chaos. You know, I always say with Beast of Chaos armies, don't leave home without those battalions. And I didn't really see a need for battalions in any other book until I came to Cities of Sigmar. I always looked at them as empty points. So I got to kind of tip my hat to your explanation there on battalions with Cities of Sigmar, man. Good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in some armies they're completely useless, and I think in some armies you absolutely need them.
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. So that's it. We're now down to the closing thoughts with Gary. Gary, closing thoughts, man. What do you got?
So on this one, I'm not going to be as drawn out as the other one, but it's going to be probably, in my opinion, it impacts me more than anything else. And that's your attitude towards everything, towards life in general, towards work, towards family, towards people you don't like, towards friends. You have to, the two things that are going to define you is character and your ethic. And if you have a bad attitude, your character and ethic are definitely going to suffer, because you're not going to perform at the best person that you are, because you're allowing something negative to take away from who you should actually be as a person. And I know there's individuals out there that it won't matter because they've already made this massive turn and they're negative and everything's against them every day. Well, it's against all of us, but it's how you approach that. Life isn't favorable. It's what we do with it. And the first thing you can do is have a positive outlook on what it is that's going on. Obviously, if you have tragedies and things that happen in your life, you're going to take side steps to that. Like somebody passes away. And I don't believe in the unexpectedly and the expectedly type of things, because I had a friend of the family's. Their great-grandmother lives to be 104 years old. And when she passed away, everybody was equally as devastated as when a younger person had passed away, because you've got to know them for that long. And the other ones, it's a different kind of hurt. But anyway, not to stay on the negatives there. There's always something positive to pull out of a situation. Oh, there's nothing positive to pull out of me getting trapped on at work. Well, there is, because now you know you don't want to work there. So now you should be positive and go find somewhere else that meets what you want from an employer and what they want from an employee. If you're not getting that, first look at yourself, then look at your employer. Maybe it's you, maybe it's them, but it doesn't matter. You ultimately control you and how you look at things and how you approach things. I'm stating this because of something back in April that I found out that I could have just took a right turn on and checked out of everything and not talked to anybody. And nobody would have blamed me for it. But that's not me. That's not who I am. And I refuse to let something else take away the positive nature that I am. Yes, am I boisterous and speak my opinion? Yes, but I never outrightly do it to make somebody else weaker or hurt them. I just state it because it's a fact. And I would rather be hated for the truth and loved for lies when it comes out of that. So be positive on what it is you do, and if you don't like where you're at in your situation in life, find a way to change it.
So, another great show.
Grimdark Live, I'd like to thank you for slumming it through another show with us for all things dice, dragons, demons, and a dwarf in the Age of Sigmar and 40K worlds. We'll be back live next Thursday, so until then, remember, roll them dice fun and fair, and don't be a frickin' short pants. If you missed the live show, you can catch us again right here on the next Grimdark Live podcast. Never fear, gang. There'll be more great content from Grimdark Live throughout the week, with Monster Mondays, Table War Tuesdays,
Warhammer Wednesdays, Grimdark Grudge Matches, and a ton more, so stay tuned and stay grim, all you dice chucking goose sniffing gamer goons. You're all awesome.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue.
Remember, embrace the main message here from Grimdark Live, and that's a social contract we have between gamers and the commitment we have to each other and this community. We're only as good as our last game. Check us out at GrimdarkLive.com. Don't forget to give our channel a like or subscribe if you haven't already done so. So long, Grimdark Goons. Until next time, may the dice gods bless you and your sweaty palms. Bye.